the plant stories. They travel and they survive. And what is native anymore? The native plant. And yes, we do want to preserve them because they're losing habitat. But for me, why the native plants are so worthy of our attention is they hold the history. They hold the thousands of years of that chaparral stand in the desert. You know, the ancient ginsengs here in these mountains, you know, that seed over and over, they hold the story, they hold that history. And to me, that's those invisible threads that keep us intact. As you and I have talked about, you know, there are medicine people, my teachers, they go out and they're not on YouTube, they're not on social media, nobody knows. They are literally saying their prayers and doing their ceremonies for the web, you know, to really help keep it intact. So the seen, the unseen, so many different levels of working with Gaia.
You're listening to Catalyst Talks, conversations with change agents, outliers, superheroes, and truly conscious leaders modeling what it is to be an unstoppable force for good and truth in this world. What lit these catalysts on fire to do their work, and what nuggets of wisdom can they share with a world literally on fire? I'm your host, Stephanie Trager. I'm a transformational catalyst and life coach to maverick change agents in business, leadership, and life. On this podcast, I wear an eclectic mix of hats, including earthkeeper, wayfinder, truth teller, coach, lawyer, business, and impact strategist. My intention is holding space for higher purpose, peak wellness, soul mastery, and deeper impact so we can live in harmony with ourselves, each other, and nature. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. If you love it, please share and spread the word. We're on YouTube and all the podcast platforms. See the show notes on catalysttalks.com for links and enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Catalyst Talks podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. Your attention means the world to me. Before we drop into this uninterrupted episode, I am here to let you know we have a few places left for our journey to Colombia in December, the expansion quest in Cogiland, Colombia, where we will be going on pilgrimage with the incredible Cogi people, a handful of mamos will be taking us along with them on their pilgrimage. It is an exclusive, like, oh my gosh, rare opportunity to go and learn and study and humble ourselves in the presence of these beautiful, intelligent, sacred teachers. We'll be bridging ancient wisdom with the modern world in this quest to connect with new dimensions of ourselves, each other, and nature. We'll be blessed with their presence and teachings, and we'll be exploring and weaving, expanding our aperture of perception, ways we can approach being in our bodies, in our earth, in our creations, and how we work with the world at this time where our next evolution, higher purpose, is calling. So we'll be filling our bodies, souls, and beings with beautiful nature, stunning water. Oh my gosh, the Caribbean Sea there, the beaches are gorgeous, the jungles, the landscape, the mountains. We'll be experiencing all of it together with a small crew, an intimate crew. And half of us are filled already. Half of the trip is filled already. So if this is interesting for you, we will be doing this in December. The quest will end before Christmas and it will be before the holidays. And it will be just a beautiful opportunity to experience a solstice portal like you've never experienced before. So you just go to the website. And actually in this episode with Kat, we talk about the crackling of Mother Earth, the Shikwa. We talk about the invisible threads that enshroud our earth that the Kogi are so known for in their ability to know things that we need to know, that we get to go there and learn from them around how we can hold space for this next evolution of ourselves and humanity. This is a place for us to remember who we really are so we can do the work we're really here to do. And as this conversation with Kat unfolds on today's episode, we will drop into that. We'll expand what a lot of this means. And if this resonates, check out the website. You can find the link to this journey in the show notes for today's episode, as well as at my website, stephanietrager.com, and just go to the menu and you will see Journey to Colombia 2023. All right. Stay tuned and enjoy this episode. Welcome. Welcome back, Kat. It is so amazing to have you back in the Catalyst Talk studio. I'm so excited for this episode, this conversation, this transmission with you. Founder and director at Sacred Plant Traditions, a clinical herbal school, a well-loved elder you are and wisdom keeper in the herbal community and beyond, teacher, mother, sister, friend, and author of Energetic Herbalism. a guide to sacred plant traditions, integrating elements of vitalism, Ayurveda, and Chinese medicine. Hello, hello. There are so many places we get to go in this conversation.
I know, we're ready. All right, Stephanie, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Yeah, there's so many places I want to go with you in this conversation, and like the energetics of plants and all the things. Mm-hmm. So is this podcast. So I trust we're going to go where we need to go. And for those who don't know Kat, we had an episode in early, I think it was in early 2020. And you can listen to that episode number 9 on the podcast.
I know, early days. Early
and you know what? Days. You know what the title was? The Plants Speak. This was
that before. Was you. That was you. You wanted that to bring that forward. So
It was before your book too. And this was before what feels like another lifetime ago, another space and dimension ago, right? So yeah, I'm really excited to unpack what energetic herbalism is in so many ways. Your book is so multidimensional, and as are you. So it's not just your book, right? This is you are so multidimensional. And the book itself is packed with information, applications, its spiritual teachings, philosophy, imaginal portals, and a gorgeous materia medica and your philosophy around that. And there's just so much that for anyone who doesn't know what herbalism, you know, isn't familiar with herbalism, this book is for the whole world. And it's a guide, an encyclopedia. And girl, you have an index. You have an index. You're legit.
A long index. They were very surprised at how long the index took. So I think that was fun and it was wonderful. And there's just so many, you know, stories and herbalists and plants and thoughts and concepts really to bring in. And so it's full. It's definitely full.
Yeah. And the process of creation, the process of birthing this beautiful, you know, contribution, it's huge. So I want to drop into the first place I want to start with us today is around plant medicine, right? Plant spirit medicine. And as herbalists, you know, we have a different meaning and understanding and experience with plant spirits, right? Many people in the larger world are coming into this gnosis of what ayahuasca is or plant medicine in that capacity. And yet, you know, we know that all plants are medicine and all plants have spirit, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd love for you to talk to us about your relationship with energetic herbalism and how you came to be the one who wrote this book, which adds so much context and depth to the body, mind, emotion, spirit, soul, the energetics of our relations with ourselves, each other.
Yeah, wonderful. So before I talk about plant spirits, I think I'll talk a little bit about the book because that'll provide a context and from whence the words cometh. So essentially, this book is my 3-year curriculum. And I no longer offer that 3-year curriculum. I'm evolving into different classes and courses. And as a clinician, I just absolutely love where the plants and the people meet. You know, this is where it's happening. This is where the field is of our merging and our coming together and working with those energetics. And so, you know, I really felt like I wished I would have started my herbal education learning about energetics, you know, 40 years ago when I was just studying basically with the plants. I really didn't have teachers for a long time, but I had the Appalachian Mountains and I apprenticed to the plants. It was really a Western paradigm. It was more allopathic. It was more symptomatic. And so that's sort of the European model, and energetics was just beginning to come in via Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, and then some of my local folk Appalachian, who were a mix of Scottish and African, and there was a whole medley that happened in the Appalachian Mountains of energetics. So I wanted to gift herbalists, if you start with the energetics, there's so much more meaning because you're going to really understand the personality of that plant. And I'll use an example. For example, echinacea is cold. It has the energetics of cold because it clears toxic heat. So it's misused when we take it for a cold or a flu, because the body, or the energetic of that illness, is cold. So we're taking a cold medicine and putting that into that situation where forever we use Echinacea and Golden Seer, and they're two of the coldest medicines because they clear heat. And so they were used for years inappropriately, in the sense of just add ginger, just warm them. And so this is why the world is waking up to energetic herbalism and really understanding that, yes, 6,000 years of Ayurveda, 8,000 years of TCM, and 14,000 years of indigenous practices, looking at, is it hot or is it cold or is it damp or is it dry? What is the environment? We're really looking at addressing the landscape of the person. And so for me, you know, understanding these attributes, their personalities of these different plants, really helps us to know how to apply them, how to work with them, and how to understand them. So energetic herbalism is essentially, you take the energetics of the person, and that could be their constitution. I happen to absolutely fall madly in love with Ayurvedic doshas, or the three constitutions. And so you're fiery, or you have earth, or you have air. And this is how, this is our nature. This is just who we are. This is genetics. This is ancestral. This is our nature and who we are. And so that always has to be, you know, kept in mind when you're working with herbs. So you take the energetic of the person, and then you take the energetic of the plant. And then, of course, you're always involving the spirit. And for me, spirit and energetic are not really one and the same. There really is this differentiation in a way, because for me, plant spirit is that relationship. It's my relationship with chickweed, my relationship with plantain. And I've developed a relationship, just as I have developed a relationship with you. You know, it's your spirit I love. It's your spirit I travel with. It's your spirit that really feeds me and nourishes me, that when we're not together, I can bring the memory of you in. And I have you. And the beautiful thing with working with energetics, and this is a key piece that I think, given loss of habitat, looking at all the plants that are endangered, and when we're really looking at bioregional herbalism, people are talking about it, yet they're still getting their rhodiola from northern Russia. They're still, and it's hard. We have to cross the line and give up these exotic herbs that are being shipped, petroleum, and really figure out how are we going to work with our local plants. But the point is understanding that relationship and sitting with it and knowing it. And the spirits are essentially, you can't really have different spirits because it is the plant. So if you had 20 different people, which we did with Elliot Cowan, who taught me plant spirit medicine, we would take 25 people, we would journey to a plant, and it's amazing, Stephanie, how similar all of the experiences were, but it was simply shifted due to our cultural lens, because it's the pattern of the plant. Like, people would meet you and they might have different vibes of you, given the context, given who they are, but essentially your essence is the same. So what I want to finish this long thought with is the pattern. It's our pattern. Like, bronchitis is a pattern. COVID is a pattern. And it's a physiology. And plants have patterns. You know, if they're vasodilators, they bring in the pattern of relaxation. And so when we bring these plants in, it isn't just the constituents and the phytochemicals. It's that energetic. What's the pattern that they're bringing into my body? And in some ways, people are calling plants allies now. It's the new thing, plants as allies, which is great. And for me, you know, I've come to plants as teachers. because I say in my book, there's no way I could ever have an influence in you the way motherwort would. You know, I'm my own practitioner, but they're teachers and they teach us how to be human.
Yeah.
They bring a pattern of relaxation that someone may never have felt before, and they have it and we know it, and we make this pattern ours in a way. So that's a lot, and we can, you know, move around that, or if you want to go back to a certain point to elucidate.
Yeah. There's so it's what I love about the way you speak and the way you speak of plants, but the way you speak in general is it's like this dance and this, and it's, that's really the energy of energetic herbalism. Right. And when I'm hearing you, I'm thinking of a time about 11 years ago where you said skullcap. You need skull cap. And it was like, I had a concussion. Like we were on a bus and we were in Ecuador and you said skull cap. And if you look at the materia medica of skull cap, is it for concussions? Is it for headaches?
Indirectly. It's for convulsions. It's for epilepsy. It's cooling. It's clearing. It's aligning. So you won't see that possibly in a materia medica for specific indications.
Yeah.
When you take the energetics, then you can apply it. You know, it's not the this herb for that.
Yeah.
It's here's scutellaria lateral flow. This is its energetics. And you then take that pattern and overlay that. And so for you, you know, you're fiery and you're pitta and it's and heat rises. Concussions are what they are, but heat rises. So I was just thinking, oh, let's calm, let's soothe, let's nourish, because skullcap also nourishes the nervous system. Yeah. And the amount of work and energy expenditure that comes from trauma or traumatic brain, I mean, that's aside from the injury, there's the energy you just expended. And let's go back in and re-nourish and kind of recalibrate. And that's the skull cap.
I love it, because everything is everything, which is so what I want to dive into around when I think of you and I think of energetic herbalism. While it is a specific and it's not a specific, it's a pattern and it's all of these things. It's the holographic energy, right? It's holographic. And what do we mean when I say the holographic nature? You talk about fractals as well in nature. And so, and because you can read, you become a reader, right? Of energy in order to assign the patterns. So what do you think of when I say holographic nature of reality?
Yum. Feels good. The energy of that phrase, you know, feels really good in my body. You know, the hologram, you know, the whole is within every piece. And so when I think about energetic herbalism in that context, you know, the whole beauty is we're treating our inner landscape and we're working with our outer landscape. And so the medicine of place is also part of the plan. For example, Mormon tea is our analog or our American ephedra, which is very drying, which is ephedrine, which is, unfortunately, it's not available anymore by law, but we have our Mormon tea, very drying. We look at desert sage, very drying, very clarifying, all these desert medicines. That medicine of place is they are bringing in why we go to the medicine. I mean, why we go to the desert. It's this vision place. It's clarifying. It's clear. You know, if there's asthmatics moving west just for that air. So the hologram is also we harvest a plant and we're not simply getting what those constituents or what that plant is. We're gathering that place. Mm-hmm. And that place on this planet, 4.5 billion years old, while that desert piece might be 500 million years old, who knows how old that is, there's this history, there's this presence that we're gathering so much more. And that's why herbal medicine, you know, I did talk about, you know, we are stardust from the supernova, literally, you know, starting with helium and hydrogen, and then the supernovas were seeding neighboring systems 14 billion years ago. So by the time our planet was seeded, this is what we're made of. We are carbon, we are nitrogen, our bones are calcium. So there is this, you know, native people say we are stardust, and they say plants are ancestors. And this is not kind of this trite novel creation myth. You know, our plants are ancestors because we are the carbon in this 700 million year old pine tree. It has been here. And so this whole resonance, you know, you drink a cup of nettle tea, we use herbal medicine. There's this, you know, familiarity. It's like this aha, you know, we're familiar because we're taking part of ourselves. So that is our ancestry. You know, I honor the Monacan Nation, whose land that we are graced and gifted, and we're still working with this thriving nation. And we honor the ancestors of all the plants and the rocks and the Appalachians. And, you know, it's that continuance. And all that being said, I'm trained as a physician assistant. And so at the right time, you know, pharmaceutical medicine, chemical medicine, all of it has its place on its spectrum. But the difference is that recognition. And when we recognize a part of ourselves from another galaxy, another solar system, that potentiates our wisdom, that potentiates, right, I am nature. We protect and we defend what's ours. And so we understand we can't separate. And I'm sure many of your guests have said this, we don't go out into nature. We are our nature. And so why we love the ocean, that water element gives us something up to our nature that nourishes that. So I don't know if that's exactly the holograph, a piece of it, but it's just this continuum. It just, you know, does it ever stop? And I just, you know, with the plants, you know, that is that multidimensional level of seeing all of that represented.
Yeah. The morphic resonance, right? Like that remembrance. Yeah. And so it's interesting, like where I've been, are you familiar with Rupert Sheldrake?
Of course. Right?
I was listening to morphogenetic. He has this little course on the morphogenetic field and or resonance, right? And it's so interesting because as we talk about the holographic nature of reality, it is this, like you just said, it's this never ending layer after layer, and it's our expanding our aperture of perception that allows us to access more and more and more. And the complexity of our world is growing. What I love about just coming back to the plants and this practice of energetic herbalism, it's so grounding. It's taking these concepts, right? For a lot of people, they can study it and think about it, but you're taking these concepts and it's so applicable. So
yeah,
it's so exactly. Grounded. And one of the things I love that you said is that how you like to work with plants, instead of having just random number, like 44 plants for one one plant for 44 things. So
yes, that's Suevo Brooks. I just really want to honor the source of that quote, and understanding that with traditional peoples, you know, we were in Ecuador and other places, in Belize and Nicaragua, you know, for one, they're not calling up a large wholesale company and ordering online and having it delivered. You know, it's what they have in their region. They need to work with and understand. And the other thing is really understanding that pattern. You know, J.R. Worsley, who brought five element, five phase theory to the United States, he and many others have really said that the plants that are growing within a 50-mile radius Even if you're renting, it doesn't matter. But within that 50-mile radius, there is that physics. There is that resonance. And so, yes, you can get phenomenal herbs, you know, reishi from different places, and also really bringing in that home ground. I mean, everyone wants to be grounded, wants to be there. And by having the plants that have been living in the earth where you are for maybe 50 years, you bring that in, that has an impact, and ever so subtle. Yeah. And the other thing is really honoring the intelligence of the matrix of the evolution of these plants. Why have they come up with this whole pattern, with this whole presentation? And, you know, women primarily have been taking calcium for 25, 30 years. And not only is osteoporosis getting worse, but we're starting to see calcium building up in the heart, calcium building up in kidney. So we're isolating nutrients and taking them where the calcium-rich blends of herbs, they have magnesium, because chlorophyll is magnesium. Mm-hmm. And magnesium is the heart element. Everybody's like, oh, more magnesium, more magnesium. And our blood and chlorophyll are identical, except in the heart of the ring in chlorophyll, it's magnesium and we have iron. So in taking whole plant medicine, I'm not saying nature has every single answer, but the technology that lies within nature is, we're just beginning to understand that. And so as we're trying to move through this horrific situation we're in, what is that technology? How do we, you know, put our effort and energy into understanding that pattern? Yeah. And then how could we either replicate it or bring that into our systems? Our bodies are a system, our hearts, our spirits. So, you know, there's so much intelligence that we're just really beginning to step into.
Yeah. And it's the imperative portal is understanding, at least feeling the energetics, right? There's the reductionist approach is proliferating. It still proliferates them, right? And so this, one of the things I find really interesting is I just saw an article from like some science magazine, and it's on quantum biology. And I find it interesting. Oh, there's like this new frontier of quantum biology, right? So new. And yet it's so reduced to, once we do this, like we can heal you from over here through the quantum subspace. Well, like, first of all, it's not new. And second of all, it's another way to reduce it to the one thing versus that holistic approach of healing. And to your point about place, how does the earth know? How does dandelion know to grow in abundance in one area, but not in another?
Oh, I don't know if where dandelion can't grow. You know, it's conditions. It's the environment. It's the landscape. If it's favorable, Lord knows that beautiful, profound, profound medicine is going to grow. Same thing with plantain, plantago. I was so excited. I just found out, you know, people call it white man's footprint, that it, you know, travels around the world where colonizers have been. But we have a native plantain. And then looking deeper, we have four native plantains. And that was very exciting. So plants will move to the most hospitable environment. And what's so interesting, especially with fire, now what they saw after the California fires, that mullein, Verbascum thaspis, which is a profound lung remedy, was moving in. And it, the way it spreads its seeds, it's like, you know, millions and millions of tiny, tiny seeds. And what it's doing is it's going in and having, it's a biennial. And so it's not only there for medicine, it's there for pain and, you know, for us, but it digs a root and then it leaves so much compostable matter that it becomes that whole permaculture action in of itself. Mm. So that's what nature is. You know, permaculture to me should be named indigenous farming techniques. And, and, you know, kudos to where kudos is. But that's Gaia.
Yeah.
It's all permaculture. It's all harvesting resources. It's all putting in swales where it's needed or however that is. And, you know, the interesting thing with vitalism, which is the Western energetic medical system that comes from Greek humoral, is that vital force. And our bodies are constantly adjusting. You know, if I'm having a fever, well, my body's adjusting to that and making compensations and, you know, coming back to that homeodynamics. And the earth is doing the same thing. And that's Lovelock and Amarguelis's Gaia hypothesis. Mm-hmm. And so she is constantly changing the salinity of the ocean to the fires, to the smoke. And so we have to also understand that everything that the earth is going through are adjustments to what's happening. And so that in of itself is a huge pattern. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we allow these to happen. You know, these are catastrophes, most use and abuse. And also, we've been here before.
Yeah.
You know, we have been here before, and the earth has equilibrated in that way. So the last thing I'll say about landscape is it's, you know, Beauchamp, Antoine Beauchamp, was a brilliant French chemist, and he was the one that said it's the terrain. And it was Pasteur who came along and brought in germ theory, and actually it said that purported that he stole Beauchamp's research, and it was said, and who knows who's in those deathbed scenes, but you know, at the end, you know, Pasteur did say it is the terrain, it isn't the germ, and it really is both.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of going back to the energetics, when we're as healthy and when our energetics are clear, and I mean, look at comorbidities of COVID. You know, folks went in inflamed, did not come through very well. So our role and our task is to really help people work with that state of health with their inner terrain. And so that when we do come up in front of these challenges, you know, we take them on with greater vitality. In understanding that.
Beautiful. I love the, you know, my brain always thinks in the holographic, it just does now. And I, well, if we can really start to train ourselves to think that way, the energetics, right? It's as within, so without, as above, so below, you know, the mullein growing in this transformational place where fires pass through, is mullein good for our lungs? You know, is mullein our medicine as well? And in places where dandelion, for me, I sometimes look at it and it is also like the energetics of why is that maybe I'm imposing or projecting my belief on something, but in a place where our lung or our livers are so toxic, our blood is so toxic from the glyphosate and all of the destruction and how people are feeding themselves, you know, and then dandelion growing in abundance everywhere. Is it because we need to cleanse our liver and our blood? You know, how does it know? And so like in the, our ecosystem, our gut bacteria, you know, we're full of bugs and they're healthy bugs and viruses too. And there's lots of bugs on plants and they're not all toxic to plants. Right. And we have, and so talk a little bit, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about like the plant's defenses in that same way. I think about, as you speak about plant's defenses, I'm just seeing us as a human and invite the audience or the listeners to imagine that you are a plant as Kat shares, you know, why do plants smell and how do they deal with bugs or insects that are predators?
Well, yeah, that's a podcast. And it's,
I know.
And, So one of the things that I love to teach that, you know, plants, again, were here billions of years before us. And that we tend to have this anthropocentric view of everything. And so plants, in my personal opinion, and every herbalist is going to have a different relationship, plants are here as part of Gaia, as part of evolution, as part of this whole magnificent creation. And they are concerned about their proliferation and their relationships and their communication. And their defenses, for example, tannins in plants are part of the plant's immune system. When there's an infection, tannins go out to estrange. So when we have infections and there's histamine and it's pussy and the whole immune response and it gets damp and boggy, our intention is to estrange and dry and clear. So we'll use tannic herbs to do that. And so we'll use agrimony or meadowsweet or clearing herbs to not have so much inflammation, which sets up a landscape of greater infection to take place. Because we've all had that high school or grade school experience where we put the petri dish in a closet and watch mold grow. So our landscape, we want to be clear, we want to be dry. And so a lot of times the constituents that the plants are using for themselves have a definite application for us. And yet, you know, ginseng, our magnificent Appalachian gem, you know, that survived the ice age. So we have a lot of stress, but this plant, the Aralia family, had to learn how to adapt to stress. And so it has steroidal compounds in it that when we take them in, there's a familiarity, but they aren't our chemicals. There are no human chemicals in any plant, possibly save testosterone and pine pollen, estrogen and hops, and maybe pomegranates. But what plants have are constituents that are similar to ours, and they're just similar enough to invoke a response. So we take ginseng that helps us deal with stress, these steroidal saponins that go to our adrenals, go to our lungs, go to our bodies, and help us to become more resilient. And so the plants have their whole world, their whole chemistry. And because we are related, maybe genetics, they, you know, they say we're closer related to fungi and to mushrooms than we are plants. But I'm talking about the sacred relationship, mm-hmm. as far as ancestors, as far as teachers. And I think when you're going back to your quantum brand new theories, and you can just imagine what wise elders are sitting, hopefully just chuckling and saying, oh, yes, our children are thinking they discovered something new, and they hold that in their cosmology. And so as we're beginning to develop tools and lenses and technology to go in now and look and see and define and articulate cosmology, when we take the sacred out of that, then it leaves us only to that reductionist realm in order to language that.
Yeah.
And so the fear of allowing the sacred to have its place in the cosmos and in deep physics. You know, Benoit Mandelbrot is the Polish mathematician who brought us fractals. And he was absolutely brilliant. He was studying chaos theory. And he brought in this whole allowance. And so I think spirit is entering these sciences now, and how, you know, that whole sacred language, and hopefully we're bringing the morphogenic fields of both, and there really isn't this separation.
I'm feeling the energetics of that land in my, like my heart right now. And yeah, it's interesting because I'll often jump to judgment. I'll observe myself, jump to judgment. Oh, there they go again with the reductionist. I invented it instead of awesome, you know, and like holding something so that it can unfurl its potential. It's all about allowing the potential, like even in plants that are growing in really toxic environments. And then they're sprayed with all kinds of, you know, Roundup and toxic chemicals and herbicides, fungicides, larvicides, all the sides, you know, we're like reducing their potential. And therefore reducing our own potential.
Absolutely. And to understand that, you know, dandelions are everywhere because they have mastered one of the easiest forms of proliferation. They're wind generated on all of those magnificent seed heads. So when we look at, say, our beloved, whether it's a trillium or a false unicorn root, certain plants are endangered because the reproductive cycle is so complex. And it's very, very intricate of how that species proliferates. And dandelion, you know, when colonists arrived here, they were pretty darn shocked that the botanical name of dandelion is Taraxacum officinale. Taraxacum is a Greek word, remedy of all disorders. And officinale indicates that it's the official plant in the marketplace. So dandelion wasn't simply a great medicine for Europeans, it was food. And so one of the first farms that came about when colonists first arrived was they planted dandelions. So this whole beautiful, tragic, interesting human story of now we're turning around and looking at, you know, the herbicides that they're, you know, my pristine lawn is now speckled. And so, you know, we're interesting, we're funny, but the plant stories, you know, they travel and they survive. And what is native anymore? The native plant. And yes, we do want to preserve them because they're losing habitat. But for me, why the native plants are so worthy of our attention is they hold the history. Mm-hmm. They hold the thousands of years of that chaparral stand in the desert. You know, the ancient ginsengs here in these mountains, you know, that seed over and over, they hold the story, they hold that history. And to me, that's those invisible threads that keep us intact. Mm-hmm. As you and I have talked about, you know, there are medicine people, my teachers, they go out and they're not on YouTube, they're not on social media, nobody knows. They are literally saying their prayers and doing their ceremonies for the web, you know, to really help keep it intact. So the seen, the unseen, so many different levels of working with Gaia. You know, we work on our acupuncture meridians and we work on our energies, whether it's Reiki or polarity. Well, it's the same thing with Earth. You know, we can look to the forest, but there's also other layers, whether it's ozone or whatever that is.
Beautiful. That holographic overlay again, because it's, yes, it's holographic in the physical realm is what you're describing, right? And then there's the holographic in the emotional realm, even like how, you know, where does violence live in me? Until I clear that up, war in Ukraine, where can I take responsibility for the energetics I hold? That is a projection of everything, right? I am a holographic fractal of everything. And so that's one piece. And I love the calling in and reminding everybody that we are part of this living Gaia who is her own meridians. And we've talked about this before. We're going to be going to, and I wish you were coming, to Colombia in December.
Oh, you want to know how much I want to go walk with you and the Kogi and the Colombian coastline and the magic. That ceremony.
Yeah, they're true grid keepers. Like, you know, they are. And they, it's how do indigenous cultures around the world know that they have different ways or different words, but they know that there are others like them holding their meridians or their chakras and the other in another continent, right? And the same thing, like the Kogi say, they call it the Shikwa, and it's these invisible threads that enshroud the earth, and that they, when they're all connected, they're holding the universe to support Mother Earth. They're like threads of the universe holding to support Mother Earth. And when there is imbalance in their energy among, you know, when there's imbalance on Earth, the Shikwa, the flow in these threads is interrupted, and it's the crackling of Mother Earth happening. And so where's crackling in our nervous system or our immune system happening? Where's crackling in Mother Earth happening? And the way that they go about the prayers, they're making pagamentos, they're making payments to Mother Earth. So
Exactly. And on that note, when you say, how do they know? You know, in Elliot Cowan's book, he tells the story of, I'm so sorry, I can't remember his last name. He was the editor of High Times, and he was this brilliant ethnobotanist. And he was deep into ethnobotany before it kind of went off into this whole other publication. But so he had spent years and years learning the Waiari language, and he went down to the Amazon way before a lot of other shaman seekers were, you know, en route. And he worked on the language, and he said, I'd love to meet your shaman. And everybody that was gathered around him, because he was very curious looking, very tall, very white. And they said, oh, are you sick? And he said, oh, no, I want to study the plants. And it was said that there was this uproarious laughter, and they couldn't understand, why would you ask a person about a plant? Mm. You want to know them. Why aren't you going right to the plant? Wow. Mm. So their birthright, their sovereignty was born into this world. If you want to know about a rock, you ask the rock, because there is an energy. There's a communication. Mm. And so how they know about these lines is they know that intelligent design of nature. They had their visionaries. They had their dream time. You know, Einstein always used dream time to drop into an alternate consciousness in order to get past the limitations of the mind. And so the mind is not our master. And yet, in some ways, this is where what we've put on the altar. Mm. We put the intelligence, the scientific, the reductionist. We put the mind, you know, as first and foremost, as versus, you know, the heart, or that aspect of the mind that sees, is clairvoyant, is listening. Mm-hmm. And so, and it is coming. Is it coming soon enough? Who knows? We're going to enjoy the ride and show up as best we can. But I do believe people are starting to understand that nature has such a profound technology. And when Susan Simard came out with her brilliant, brilliant work of the trees and communicating and the mother tree. And, you know, I have to say, a teacher of mine was like, have we not been saying this?
Yeah, that's.
Have we not been saying to everyone, find the mother tree of your land, find the mother tree of your property, tend that, you know? So it's a lag time.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lag time and lots of space and to get cynical. And at the same time, how do we enjoy it? How do we bring it forward?
I love. I say that everything you say, but you know, I know there's so many things that I know that I haven't read. I'm like, oh, I should know that author. Why don't I know that author? And you know, certain things I just know because I know. And mm-hmm. I feel like when we can become more comfortable with knowing because we know, because I lived in ancient trees and they told me, or I walked the path with the, you know, the yarrow every day and they talked to me, like, and we can just trust ourselves. That's what so much of your teaching is about, right? It's like listening, but also trusting what you're receiving. Right. And I would be remiss if I didn't have you just mention something about the doctrine of signatures as like okay, sure. If you're not going to trust yourself, we'll give you a little obvious.
Right. Yeah. It's so interesting. So the doctrine of signatures, it really had its heyday in Europe, 14th, 15th, 16th century. But it's really archetypes. It's a form of archetypal medicine where it says the form or the color or some aspect of the physical plant is what the energetic of the part of the body that it will heal. And so Cherokee have this. It just seems natural. I mean, if you're looking at something, you can't help but begin to relate it to something else. So, for example, Cherokee blue, a lot of times are poisons or nervous system or could be toxins, or red would be blood. And it's this energetic signature that is saying what this plant may have a use for. It works a lot with flower essences and with vibrational medicine. And it's very childlike. I mean, I teach children all the time and we'll stand in front of, you know, I have these magnificent sentials of mullein. Mullein is very welcome because mullein also works with grief. And I think we're a nation that since 9/11, we really haven't dealt with real grief. We talk about it, but we're still there. But so they're magnificent and you feel, you know, this stature and it works with the spine and it's bright and it's grounded. It has a basal rosette. So it's looking at all of those growth patterns again and distilling. You know, Goethe was a huge proponent of working with what he called plant phenomenology. And he's saying you get into the phenomenon of the plant. And so he would sit with one plant for a long time to let it reveal itself in the nuances. And, you know, that's what traditional people, they don't need a materia medica of 100 herbs, you know, Rosita and Baileys, they work with, you know, basil, chrysanthemum, and rose. And with these three plants, you know, it's that spirit medicine. So, but the Doctrine of Signatures is just such a beautiful support of the archetypes, you know, the forms and the shapes. And, you know, I did want to say something about listening and, you know, how many plants do we really need? And I've been teaching about entheogenic plants way before ayahuasca came on the scene and psilocybin. And I'm not saying, oh, yay, me. I was teaching about them in the hopes that I was seeding the possibility of bringing these into our materia medica, because our mental health issues, our nervous system, you know, these medicines are really powerful and profound. And so here's this resurgence and it's fabulous. And, you know, the repatterning of brain, you know, with the psilocybin and microdosing. But the one thing I do want to say with the ayahuasca, as far as, you know, a concern of mine is, you know, how many times do people need to go back? Because, you know, they asked Carl Jung, he was in at the time of Albert Hofmann and all these discoveries in the 50s. And they came to Jung and they said, aren't you going to do these medicines, these plants? And he said, when my desk is cleared. So when he needed direction, when he needed to know where to go, he might think of it. But what happens is every Friday night, it's the ayahuasca circle. And it's like, you know, the teacher will not keep teaching you if you're not listening. And so ideally, you know, you work with these medicines and you have this mission, you know, they give you, we're not listening. Even if we're doing these sacred plant medicines and we have to keep returning. So much more on that and no judgment. It's how do we work with that?
Yes. I'm so glad that you presenced that, Kat, because it's a great tie to everything we're talking about, the reductionist approach, right? Or even the mechanistic approach of the medicine, where when you are in the jungle where that plant was grown and you are hearing the Ikaros, the songs from the, you know, that was, it's all intentional. It's all part of it. When you are listening to the insects sing their song in the jungle while you are having this, it's this like whole, you know, catalyst of and synergistic experience. Even I remember this, I remember very much when we were in Ecuador in, let me just tell you this. I took your class on entheogens in like 2007 at the International.
Oh, yes. Paul Stamets was there.
Yeah. I know. I looked, I was like, oh, he's in her class. She must be a big deal. That was before.
No, it was very humbling. I wasn't a big deal at all.
You are a big deal. So the interesting, what I wanted to say was when we were in Ecuador and there was a medicine man, I forgot his name, but he was sharing with us his Huachuma, his San Pedro, and teaching, showing us a part of the cactus and teaching us about telling about the personality of how this plant was growing and all about the personality of this one before we had an opportunity to work with her. And it's so much of that is missing. And I feel like, you know, back in 1997, when I was living in Humboldt County and we were growing ganja, because it was supporting our forest activism, you know, but it was like in nature. We were in the ancient redwood, like right above the ancient redwoods and in this pristine, beautiful environment. And I didn't even smoke. I sat with these plants and tripped my brains out. And I received so much information just from sitting with them. Right. And I think that it would be a really beautiful experience for like sort of the initiation process of not only like fast and all of those, you know, preparatory parts of going to work with plants, you know, entheogens, but I think a really beautiful initiation or introduction could be like, you know, for people just to work with the mugwort or whatever it is that's growing outside and find your plant and practice all of those things that you teach in your book, that you share in the book. It's all there. How do you go about really connecting to the energetics beforehand? Right.
Exactly. And so I don't want to be judgmental with the uses of these medicines, nor were you. I didn't hear that at all. And also, as they're coming into our Materia Medica and working with Vietnam vets and trauma, I think there's this huge place in our pharmacopoeia that these plants belong. And also, you know, it's funny because I'm watching people take microdosing and psilocybin, and then they're adding, oh, lion's mane and oh, niacin, and they're kind of formulating. And I thought, but the teacher is the mushroom, you know, and I love lion's mane and I love other things. But will we hear the teacher? You know, do we need more? And I think that's this notion of, oh, I can't just sit with one plant. Oh, chickweed isn't as exciting, obviously, as psilocybin, but it is. Like, we have had profound journeys with my teacher, Karen Sanders and Sarah Holmes and their Choctaw medicine. We have had equal journeys.
Yeah.
And so it's that limitation. It's that introduction. It's that kind of more, bigger, better. And really coming down and really saying, oh, I did hear that. And I think sometimes we hear the truth of what we need to do, but we want more. But well, tell me how. Or it's like, you know, and it's always coming back to the same, right? It's like the same diet is generally, the best diet is the same. Back to the plants, back to nourishment, back to, you know, it's kind of the same. And our peace and our love and our hope, and it can be different messages from different journeys, but, you know, really practicing the simplicity and allowing that to be the guide.
I love that. Yeah. So one other place I want to go with you is the next generation, right? Like what you're saying, right? There's beautiful, everything in here is teaching for us and for the next generation. And well, we're stepping into this beautiful era of awakening consciousness, and people are awakening and remembering. And there's huge movements around regenerative agriculture and permaculture, as you said, right? And then so one of the pieces that I'm always wanting to be a voice for, and I'll just be a voice for it here because I can, is that, you know, there's people who all of a sudden, like yesterday, you might have been in finance and today you're in regenerative agriculture. But yay, yes, 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 more of that, please, right? That's the awakening. And I really feel like it's one of those places where the Kogi make pagamentos. One of those pagamentos I want to make is being that bridge between, wait, there's all of these elders, these grassroots keepers of the information or the cultivators of the wisdom that's been passed down from indigenous traditions, right? Like the elder teachers of Western herbalism, for example. You've always walked the sustainable way. You've always walked the, what does Robin Kimmerer call it? The honorable harvest way, right? Like that is just kind of built in for decades. And so I would love to see a stronger bridge of reciprocity between this new movements, which are amazing and happening rapidly and so necessary to transform agriculture and healing and medicine and everything and food. And I'd love to see that bridge with some of the elder, like old school herbal teachers like you.
we are being sought after for teachings and whatnot. But I do want to say something that I believe my teacher, Stephen Buhner, said. You know, it's like, how in the course of 10 years did our small, kind of outlaw, brilliant, small community of herbalists mushroom to the millions? And you're on Instagram and all these herbalists and these beautiful mandalas and plants and medicine making. What he's saying is, he was saying, this is Gaia. This is Gaia initiating this desire to know the plants, to know the plant medicine. So is it because all of a sudden it became very cool to be making your own medicines and having your own apothecary, whatever that is? You know, this is totally welcome. And yet we do have the brilliant elder Rosemary Gladstar, who 25 years ago was so prescient that she saw this popularity coming on and realized we do not have the plant material to sustain, you know, this voracious appetite that's coming. And so she started United Plant Savers, and people can go to their beautiful website, but it's mostly preserving the native medicines, but also bringing this consciousness now of our consumption. And so that's why, you know, for me, I want to find the analogs in my local region before I become dependent for my clients on an exotic herb that I won't be able to get, or that's contributing to the forest fires. You know, anytime we're shipping internationally, all of that is that contribution to the carbon. And so how do we literally minimize the shipments that our world, our need, our medicines, these are the very medicines. The permaculture movement is very young and, you know, coming forward. And are they acknowledging the elders? Are they acknowledging, you know, Bill Mollison, who really was the seed, the brilliant Australian seed who brought permaculture forward? He honored the Australian Aborigines. So I have many students who are teaching those courses, and I'm hoping that they are tracing the thread back to, this is Aboriginal. How did they water their plants in the Australian outback? You know, this is, how do we harvest resources? How do we gather resources? So I think we need everyone that's looking to these issues. I think it's really important. And I think it's just a matter of teaching and saying the same thing. And you know, I think there is this consciousness of elders. And I didn't grow up, I mean, we had to behave. You know, there were certain white social norms, but we didn't have these wise elders, these grannies. I was not blessed with that. And so it's coming into understanding what that is. So I know the consciousness is there. When I'm at different gatherings or watching how certain things are done, are they aware of how to do it? You know, how do they honor their, but at least the consciousness of, yes, who are our elders and appropriation? And, you know, it's ever so slow, but it is coming. And so that's the gift and the challenge. It's like the tarot. You know, the hope and the dream is the fear and the shadow. You know, with social media, there's a tremendous amount that's being proliferated minute by minute. And so we just, it's appropriate technology. You know, we've been talking about appropriate technology since E.F. Schumacher, and small is beautiful, and going way back, way back. And, you know, the other thing is, it's when we're looking at evolution in 4.5 billion years, I mean, permaculture is a nanosecond. That word is a nanosecond. The African farmers we were learning from in South Africa last year, 20,000 years. And so we have to educate ourselves. We have to get this word out. And so if there's awkwardness, if there's confusion, if there's ego that also comes through popular movements, you know, that's always been there and that always will be. But what is the message? You know, what is that whole idea of growing local? And it just can't happen soon enough in that sense? And how are we working in that way? So that was a river. We were flowing down that river.
Yeah, and I'm still on the kayak. So the beautiful heart and like modesty, it's so pure what you bring to your teachings and to us here. So thank you. I see that there is such a beautiful opportunity to sprinkle some of that over the world of where there's all this finance. There's a lot of money right now moving to impact investments, to really beautiful solutions to world problems, including farming and agriculture and medicines. And yeah, that is where I'm really feeling that like there's this almost like the well, you know, the elders who are, you have to walk a far walk and you have to be in the know to know where they are. And you guys, I think of you and Rosemary and Stephen and all and Matthew Wood and all of the beautiful elders who've really held this Western herbalism fort and collected all of the beautiful wisdom. There's like such an opportunity, I feel like, for investment in, and I'm not like manufacturing something that's not wanted, but this goes to the holographic nature of, we want to end extraction. We want to fight to end extraction. And that, how extractive am I in taking information, and not even about appropriation so much as just taking, right? And right. That goes to the vitalism of us as humanity, and is that reciprocity and making, you know, reciprocity, right? Relationship.
Right. Right. And I think our evolution in Western herbalism is we are really coming to understand that it really has been a European voice, a European vision. And so where are Appalachian elders? Where is the fifth generation Black healer in Watts, LA, that is now people are studying with her and understanding there is a whole turning. We're looking at BIPOC. We're looking at finally not those in the know or the usual experts, but the usual experts should be saying, go find the unknown healers and heroes, you know. And if I could bring five of my teachers in the Appalachian Mountains forward, that, you know, they would put us all to shame in how they harvest and where they harvest. And so I think we're all experiencing this need to turn and shine light on the indigeneity. And that can be in urban areas, that can be in rural. It doesn't really matter because we're all of the land. That's all indigenous means. Mm. It's evolution. You know, it is this process. And I'm grateful for the rapidity because, you know, pharmaceuticals are based in fossil fuels. And so the more that we're understanding how to avoid pharmaceuticals, that deals with that one resource extraction and where does that come from. And in the plant world, we have our own now harvest issues and sustainable issues. And there's magnificent harvesters and farms, huge farms in India. And, you know, we met that fabulous a grower from Pakistan of roses. And, you know, and we want to support that. But how do we support his nation supporting him? So, and there are certain things that, you know, we will have to venture beyond our borders. But we don't want to have to do that with everything because we're getting so used to just ordering something and it's on our doorstep the next day. And so all of these places that we're all kind of playing into that.
Yes. All right. So I want to play into releasing you with your time and honoring you and everybody. We were going to put all the links in the show notes. Gorgeous book. First of all, on the cover, I'm showing, for those not on the video, I'm showing the cover of Energetic Herbalism. And you have no idea how my heart delighted to see calendula, because this has been my spirit plant, my plant spirit guide from before I even knew what that was when I was 19. And I just knew because I knew. And so amazing that that's on your cover. Yeah. So thank you for being with us. We'll share links to UPS, United Plant Savers, and to where you can find more about Kat's school, Sacred Plant Traditions, and her website to learn all about her and her book and her teaching and events. Anything else you want to say?
I would love to say one more thing because it's really coming more and more into my teachings. You know, a lot of times we talk about using plants and do you use this and how do you use that? And, you know, I've really come into the habit of saying I'm working with them. Because if I were to say, well, what's Stephanie good for? And how do I use Stephanie? You know, our relationship would not develop. And so it's also, even though it's just a word, it denotes relationship. So we're working with these plants as versus using them. And it helps us to prevent the commodification of these sentient beings, that they really are kin and that we really begin. And, you know, some have gender. I don't really get into that. That's my relationship. I don't think it has to be a his or her. They're kin. And I love that word because it doesn't, it transcends, you know, that limitation of gender. So then the very last thing is, you know, I totally dig your podcast. I love your podcast, the variety of brilliant voices and teachings that come on. So it's so fun to be here with you, Stephanie. I'm a huge fan. Thank you.
Oh, I love you. I love you. I love you. Thank you. If anyone here gets a chance to take a class with Kat or be in her space of learning online, offline, definitely do so and receive this book because it's full of a holographic journey of everything. And yeah, thank you for your attention. Your attention means the world to me. And thank you, Kat, for being here.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Catalyst Talks. Stay tuned for what's up next, and please subscribe to our podcast and rate us wherever you listen. You'll find these all at catalysttalks.com. Join the conversation on social media. And if you'd like to reach out, please send me, Stephanie, a private message through stephanietraeger.com. Your attention means the world to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.